This is what the Lord has said in Psalm 45. For the sons of Korah, Maskil, a song of loves. My heart is inditing a good matter. I speak of the things which I have made, touching the king. My tongue is the pen of a ready writer. Thou art fairer than the children of men. Grace is poured into thy lips. Therefore God hath blessed thee forever. Gird thy sword upon thy thigh, O most mighty, with thy glory and thy majesty. And in thy majesty ride prosperously because of truth and meekness and righteousness. And thy right hand shall teach thee terrible things. Thine arrows are sharp in the heart of the king's enemies, whereby the people fall under thee. Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. The scepter of thy kingdom is a right scepter. Thou lovest righteousness and hatest wickedness. Therefore God, thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. All thy garments smell of myrrh and aloes and cassia out of the ivory palaces, whereby they have made thee glad. King's daughters were among thy honorable women. Upon thy right hand did stand the queen in gold of Ophir. Hearken, O daughter, and consider, and incline thine ear. Forget also thine own people and thy father's house. So shall the king greatly desire thy beauty, for he is thy Lord, and worship thou him. And the daughter of Tyre shall be there with a gift. Even the rich among the people shall entreat thy favor. The king's daughter is all glorious within. Her clothing is of wrought gold. She shall be brought unto the king in raiment of needlework. The virgins, her companions that follow her, shall be brought unto thee. With gladness and rejoicing shall they be brought. They shall enter into the king's palace. Instead of thy father shall be thy children, whom thou mayest make princes in all the earth. I will make thy name to be remembered in all generations. Therefore shall the people praise thee forever and ever. To the chief musician. And may the Lord bless the reading of his word to our hearts today. Psalm 45 is unique among all the Psalms of the Psalter. As we will see from the title, it is called a love song. And as we see in the first verse, the focus of the psalm is primarily on the king. But there are several characters mentioned in this psalm, all of them in some kind of relationship to the king. There is a queen, there is a daughter of the king and her companions, the king's sons are mentioned, and his fathers. There are daughters of other kings who seem to serve in the king's throne room. Then there is a particular mention of the daughter of Tyre in verse 12 with the wealthy people. All the characters of this love song make for a very interesting and challenging psalm to interpret. But for all of its uniquenesses, Psalm 45 properly finds its place in the scriptures so that we may study and understand it and grow in our devotion and submission to our King, Jesus Christ. As we consider connections between Psalms 44 and 45, we may wonder how there could be any connections. We would be connecting a psalm expressing God's great slaughter of Israel with a love song. But nevertheless, there are clear connections between these two psalms. One, we have already noticed, is the "for the sons of Korah" notation in the titles. This is obviously one of the main factors in all the sons of Korah psalms being placed together. But another very significant factor for why these two sons of Korah psalms are back-to-back is their mention of the king. In Psalm 44, verse 4, David said, "Thou art my king, O God, command deliverances for Jacob." Here God is called the king, and this is significant for Psalm 45 because it is a psalm consumed with the king. And let us make no mistake from the very beginning. The king of Psalm 44 is the same king of Psalm 45. As we will make special note hereafter, the king of Psalm 45 is called God himself in verse 6. "Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. The scepter of thy kingdom is a right scepter." So Psalms 44 and 45 are connected in their references to the same king, being God. As we consider the following Psalms, we find that God being referred to as king connects Psalms 44 through 48. Psalm 46 is the only exception to this, though the same point of God being king is implied in its wording, as we will see. To the connections of Psalm 45 with Psalm 44, we can also add that whereas David looked to God the king to go into the battle with Israel in Psalm 44, here in Psalm 45 we see God the king glorious in battle. Psalm 45 verses 3 through 5 say to this king, "Gird thy sword upon thy thigh, O most mighty, with thy glory and thy majesty, and in thy majesty ride prosperously because of truth and meekness and righteousness. And thy right hand shall teach thee terrible things. Thine arrows are sharp in the heart of the king's enemies, whereby the people fall under thee." So God the king entering into battle against the enemies of Israel is another connection for these two psalms, and helps to explain why the organizer put these two Sons of Korah psalms together. When we consider the psalm title, we have several issues to consider. We first need to backtrack a little. I have already explained my view that upon Shoshanim in the traditional title of Psalm 45 actually is part of the postscript to Psalm 44. It means concerning the lilies, and I understand it to indicate the people of Israel as God's frail but cherished lilies that God must defend before they are crushed by the enemies. Hengstenberg, who lived before Thurtle ever suggested the existence of postscripts in the psalm titles, rather suggested that the lilies here mentioned refer to the ladies mentioned in Psalm 45. One of the unique qualities of Psalm 45 is the mention of so many ladies. You have the daughters of kings and the queen mentioned in verse 9, the daughter spoken to in verse 10, the daughter of Tyre in verse 12, the king's daughter in verse 13, and the female friends of the king's daughter in verse 14. So Hengstenberg understands the lilies in the psalm title to refer to these women. But as we have noticed already, there are three other psalms which have lilies in their titles. One must conclude that the psalmist put this notation in the psalms for the same reason. In all of these psalms, Israel is threatened by enemies. Therefore, it is best to conclude that concerning the lilies refers to Israel and the Israelites as the cherished flowers of God, needing God's protection. It is not uniquely used in Psalm 45 as a reference to the many women which are mentioned in the psalm. So with "to the chief musician concerning the lilies" being placed at the bottom of Psalm 44, this only leaves for the sons of Korah, Maskil, a song of loves in the prescript of Psalm 45. The Maskil again is an instruction, a psalm meant to teach. In this case, the lesson is very clearly laid out for us in verse 1. "My heart is inditing a good matter. I speak of the things which I have made touching the king. My tongue is the pen of a ready writer." That the matters relating to the king is the lesson to be learned in this psalm will be clearly seen as we go through the psalm, as every expression relates in some way to the greatness and glory of this king. So Psalm 45, according to its title, is an instruction for the sons of Korah to sing in the temple services. But Psalm 45 is not only considered an instruction, it is also uniquely considered a song of loves. There is no other notation in the psalm titles like this one. Now Hengstenberg, following up on his suggestion that the lilies were a reference to the women of Psalm 45, found support for this view, saying that the word for loves here is plural and in the feminine, as the Hebrew word certainly is plural and in the feminine, and that it also refers to the daughters of the kings and the virgins mentioned in Psalm 45. To support this understanding, he says that this word for love always indicates beloved, In other words, the one who is loved. In this case, the women mentioned in Psalm 45 would be the beloved ones. But several authorities understand this title to indicate simply a song of love, a love song. And I would add that if anyone is the subject of love in this psalm, it is the king, not the women mentioned in the psalm. The king consumes the psalm with his radiance, and the psalmist in verse 1 particularly makes him clearly to be the object of his overwhelming joy, not the women of the song. So based on the actual material of the psalm, I would argue that the words should be translated a love song. The plural of the word loves may indicate the fullness of love, but the love expressed in the psalm is not for the women, but for the king first and foremost, and then secondarily, the love between the king and his queen, who is also mentioned in the psalm. For the postscript of Psalm 45, we just have to the chief musician. In my mind, there was question as to whether for the sons of Korah upon Alamoth should be added to the postscript of Psalm 45. One of the proofs Thurtell used to argue for his theory of postscripts was that Alamoth, traditionally at the beginning of Psalm 46, means maidens, maidens. Psalm 45, being uniquely a song of love and filled with women, would be more appropriate for women singing this psalm than we find Psalm 46 to be. So we argued that upon Alamoth, meaning accompanied by maidens, was part of the postscript of Psalm 45 instead, indicating that the women would join in the singing of Psalm 45. Though I was greatly impressed by his opinion in this, I found it to be a great problem when you consider the notation for the sons of Korah. The phrase for the sons of Korah is before the phrase upon Alamoth in the Hebrew ordering of the words. So if upon Alamoth belongs with Psalm 45, then so does for the sons of Korah. But this creates a strange situation where for the sons of Korah is stated both in the prescript and then repeated in the postscript of Psalm 45. But what is more troubling is that Psalm 46 is left without for the sons of Korah in its title, giving us the only psalm in the midst of sons of Korah psalms which was not intended for the sons of Korah to sing. One may suggest that, in domino-like fashion, all the sons of Korah notation should be shifted to the previous psalm, making Psalms 41 through 48 as the psalms for the sons of Korah to sing. But as I already argued, it is significant that the two groups of sons of Korah psalms begin the second and the third sections of the Bible. Psalm 41, being a Jehovah-dominant psalm and having for the sons of Korah, would then have been placed with Psalms 84 through 87, rather than with these Elohim-dominant sons of Korah psalms. All in all, I believe the explanation which explains the general ordering of the psalms is more solid than the explanation which understands the need for women to sing a love song which mentions women in it. So the only postscript for Psalm 45 is the to the chief musician notation. The for the sons of Korah notation belongs with Psalm 46. Among the biblical books, Psalm 45 is properly compared to the Song of Solomon in its romantic expression. If any man questions the legitimacy of romance in their marriages, seeing as men are naturally less inclined to such matters, they would only need to recall the Song of Solomon as a truly romantic song written by God proving the legitimacy of romance. And to the Song of Solomon, they could add Psalm 45 as well. Though Psalm 45 is a love song expressing the love of the king and queen, the psalm is only partly concerned with such matters. The psalm is totally and fully about the loving devotion expressed to the king of the psalm. As verse 1 states so clearly at the beginning, "My heart is inditing a good matter. I speak of the things which I have made touching the king. My tongue is the pen of a ready writer. The first part of the psalm only has the glory and greatness of the king in view. As the queen enters into the psalm, she is mentioned and addressed only in relation to the king, demonstrating his greatness and her benefits of being in relationship to him. Then the psalm ends, not with respect to the queen, but only to the king again. Now it is only fitting that this love song be expressive first and foremost and completely of awe-inspiring devotion and love to this king, not simply to romance. We see the king to be Jesus Christ himself, and no mere honor is given to him, since he is addressed in the psalm as God himself. So though the queen, without doubt to be identified as the church, has her own significance in this psalm, her significance only arises because of her relationship to the king of the psalm. Now most, if not all commentators, find a wedding ceremony in this psalm between the king and the one he is going to marry. Such an event certainly would result in an added taste of romance in the psalm. So verses 10 and 11 are considered the word of advice to the bride as she prepares for the wedding service, when it says, "Hearken, O daughter, and consider, and incline thine ear. Forget also thine own people and thy father's house. So shall the king greatly desire thy beauty, for he is thy Lord, and worship thou him." Then a wedding procession is seen in verses 13 through 15, when it says, "The king's daughter is all glorious within. Her clothing is of wrought gold. She shall be brought unto the king in raiment of needlework. The virgins, her companions that follow her, shall be brought unto thee. With gladness and rejoicing shall they be brought. They shall enter into the king's palace." Now the problem with this almost universally held understanding of the psalm is found in the "thee," or the "you," at the end of verse 14. It is a feminine "thee," or "you," indicating that the one being spoken to is a lady. It would be the same lady that was spoken to in verses 10 and 11 who is considered, according to this view, to be the bride. So the question arises, if the king's daughter in the procession is the bride who was spoken to in verses 10 and 11, how could the companions with this bride come to herself? In other words, the woman being addressed, the supposed bride of the psalm, cannot be both the bride in the procession and the person awaiting the procession to finally come to her. It is therefore necessary to understand the queen as the woman being addressed in these verses. She is the one encouraged to submit to her king, and she is the one who awaits the coming of the king's daughter with her companions, but not in a wedding procession, but merely as coming into the king's presence. So we must conclude that there actually is no wedding ceremony found in Psalm 45. Finally, Psalm 45 has generated various views as to whom the king of Psalm 45 actually is. Understanding the wedding situation, some have said that this was written about Solomon when he was marrying his first wife, the daughter of Pharaoh. Some have considered this the marriage of Jehoram and Athaliah. Some have even suggested, because of the mention of the daughter of Tyre, that Jezebel was the daughter of Tyre being married to King Ahab. Such suggestions are absurd at the very least, let alone blasphemous at the heart. In no way can any of these kings, all of which fell away from God so miserably, ever be called God in the ultimate sense, as it says in verses 6 through 7. Some would say that as kings and judges they could be called gods, but Paul in Hebrews 1 makes it clear that this is a reference to the one true God. It is also made clear in Hebrews 1 that this God is Jesus Christ. No other king could be referred to in Psalm 45. Any other suggestion is truly misled and blasphemous when the true and accurate opinion is made evident. And the queen, therefore, is none other than the church. Some commentators, have found in the daughters of the kings the idea of many wives and concubines, such as Solomon and other kings had. But it is never said of God that he had, or has, more than one wife. Dispensationalists, in dividing Israel in the Old Testament from the Gentile church in the New Testament, essentially seek to make God a polygamist. But God is no polygamist. His wife in the Old Testament is Israel. His wife in the New Testament remains Israel, made of both Jews and the Gentiles who were grafted in. The New Jerusalem that comes down out of heaven as a bride in Revelation is one city, which shall hold all the redeemed. There is not an Old Testament bride and a New Testament bride. God is married to only one, and Psalm 45 mentions only one queen. We, therefore, as the bride of Christ, must remain faithful to him. Often the prophets told Israel that they were adulterous against their husband, Jehovah. James, in his epistle, tells us the same when he says, "Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whoever, therefore, will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God." So Psalm 45, as we will see, is a very powerful psalm showing us the glory and greatness of our King, our husband, Jesus Christ. And then as it encourages us to be faithful to him, saying, "Hearken, O daughter, and consider. Incline thine ear. Forget also thine own people and thy father's house. So shall the king greatly desire thy beauty, for he is thy Lord, and worship thou him."